Good morning. 7:50 a.m. on the 29th of October. Pretty sure that's right. I just looked a second ago. Yeah. Thursday, October the 29th, 7:51 a.m. I forgot to walk yesterday. In my defense, I have no defense. It was a busy morning because we were getting ready to take delivery of the new oven, which meant I couldn't walk early. And then because the new range hood didn't come with light bulbs, I had to go shopping. By the time I got home from dropping the kid off from school, and yesterday was late arrival day, so she didn't have to be there till 9. By the time I got home from school with her and then went to pick up the light bulbs, it's like, oh, yeah, somewhere around 2 in the afternoon, I remembered, did I walk today? The answer was no. And it was because I got distracted and forgot. So, sorry. These things happen in my life. These things happen regularly. So, we'll do the best we can with what we got. So, today is cold. It is frosty. It's not as frosty, literally frosty, as yesterday. Yesterday was everything was covered with frost. It was beautiful with the sun coming up, and I wasn't out in it when it was, everything was frosty, but it was, other than to take the kid to school around 9, but it was very pretty. Today is just cold and damp. I've switched to a knit cap and my parka, and I need to find my gloves because fingers, but yeah, you know, I'm warm enough in my parka and sweatshirt and knit cap. The nose is running a little bit, but it's good. So I'm officially a member of SIFWA now, Science Fiction Writers of America. I'm looking forward to playing with the other self-published authors. I'm having the hardest time not to fanboy, because pretty much all the people that I've run into so far are people that I know, or I know their names. I don't know them. Jerry Purnell is an active contributor to the self-published forum, apparently, and that was kind of fun. We're having a discussion now on the nature of disruption and morning, whether or not ebooks and Amazon, or ebooks in general and Amazon in particular, has disrupted publishing. And my opinion on the subject is that it doesn't constitute technically a disruption of publishing. There are people who are arguing that the digital affordances, everything from online editing to online coding for publication, for layout, etc., that disrupts publishing. And I maintain that no. Well, that's not a bad analogy, because those services of editing, layout, and printing are all services that traditional publishing buys one way or another. The reality is that they have the same access to the same tools that I do. So anything that I could be doing through ebook and Amazon isn't disrupting them if they could be doing it too. If, in fact, they did it in a way that did not disadvantage their market. which in this case would be readers. My opinion is that the disrupted market is reading. The disrupted market is readers. Because using Clayton Christensen's definitions of disruptive innovation, what's happened is that the existing players in the reader market, the people who are providing the books to readers, have moved up the chain, as it were, so that the products that they are providing serve only the high end of the market. They completely ignore the low end of the market, and their value-added proposition is that our products are superior to all others, and therefore you will pay a premium for them. Their argument that they are operating close to cost, I don't have any argument with. They probably are operating close to cost. The problem is their costs are too high. That's not a market disruption. That's bad management. So, yeah, I have a hard time with taking the notion that we are disrupting publishing, because publishing actually has access to everyone, in fact, a lot more of the tools than we do as self-publishers. So Macmillan has access that I don't. Random House has access that I don't. And in spite of that, I still outsell them. This is not disrupting publishing. That's just bad management on publishing's part. On the other side of that is that they are fighting and doing it very effectively to protect their oligopoly in production and distribution of paperback books and hardcover books to bookstores. That's their entire and rather limited value-added proposition. Their fixed overheads are rather large because they manage a lot of real estate. They manage a lot of physical infrastructure that I don't have to deal with. The fact that they use offset printing to save a few pennies on paper distribution, notwithstanding. We sell a lot of books, a few pennies adds up. But you have to sell an awful lot of books for it to make a difference. And they have access to the printers, and apparently so do I now, I have to look into this, that would allow them to sell, to produce mass market paperbacks. And unfortunately, their mass market paperbacks cost as much as my trade books. Now, I say unfortunately because it's unfortunate for them. It's not terribly unfortunate for me. But the argument that they are hurting their business by keeping ebook prices high underscores that they're not actually embracing the ebook market as a whole. They are underserving those people who have and enjoy, who have e-readers, applications or devices, and who enjoy having access to a lot of high quality, low cost, particularly fiction. And yeah, I know all the arguments about, well, nonfiction sells more. Nonfiction does sell more. As soon as pretty much every college course in the country requires somebody to buy a fiction novel, like there are any other kind of novel, require them to buy fiction for their coursework, then I suspect we'll see fiction sales rising, particularly adult fiction sales rising. As long as we have textbooks included as nonfiction, and they are, then of course. And as long as we have manuals and how-to books, nonfiction will be pretty popular, particularly in ebooks. there will always be a market for paperback reference materials. All of the arguments about, well, if you could carry the encyclopedia in your pocket, well, I do. It's called Google. It's not a book I buy. The military is using e-readers for specifications and service manuals for their support staff. That's a good application of it, but they're also a bit awkward if you're used to having a bookmark so that you can lay the book down and look at it while you're, you know, servicing an engine. You can just lay it on the wing. And there's nothing that really prevents you from doing that with an e-reader. But the scale, the size of it is somewhat off a bit. Monk Post. You really do have to have a large-sized reader for that. And a lot of people don't, because all they read is fiction. All they read is narrative fiction at that. That's by and away the largest market. So the idea that publishing is being disrupted by ebooks is actually, while it may be causing them problems, it's not technically a market disruption. Because when you look at market disruption, you look at who are the underserved customers. If you look at publishing, who are the customers for publishers? They're generally bookstores. Publishers provide content on a wholesale basis. They are not in the retail market, generally. You know, they have some small presence, but the reality is they are a wholesale market, and what gets disrupted, what is underserved, is pretty much nobody. Any bookstore can order as many books as they want from any publisher, and the publisher will ship them. The publisher will gladly sell them on consignment books. So bookstores are not underserved. Bookstores are under-customered. Their ability to sell has been curtailed by the changes in distribution, by the changes in the production chain. Oh, good morning.
Yep.
A new dog.
My daughter's dog.
Ah.
He's not well behaved.
Well, neither am I on occasion. So, there was a guy who usually has the black lab. So, the argument that ebooks and Amazon is disrupting publishing is not correct. Because of the definition of disruption is relatively codified. It's relatively well established. So what has changed? Who are the underserved in this production chain from writer to reader? The answer has to be reader. A, they're the only ones who are actually buying the product for its intended use. They're the only ones who are buying it to read it. The agent is not buying it at all. They're representing it and taking a cut from when they sell, and they don't sell it. They only sell the rights to it to a publisher who also doesn't buy it as a story. They buy it as a product, which is then licensed for production. And they go through and they fiddle with it, they edit with it, they make it what they think is a product that they can sell, and turn around and sell the product on consignment to bookstores, to the retail level, and the retail level turns around and sells it to the people for whom the writer wrote, which is the reader. Now, I maintain that because the only people who are actually buying what the writer wrote, a story, are readers. Readers are the market. It's not publishing. Publishing is an industry. It's not a market. Now, somebody, feel free to correct me if I'm incorrecting my definitions here, but the underserved are the people who go to the bookstore and can't find the books they want to read. The underserved are the people who don't have a bookstore where they can get at it. The underserved are the people who don't or can't pay $10 or more for a paperback book. The underserved are the people who have limited access because of either the facility for access or the cost of access. So it costs me a lot to drive to the nearest bookstore. I don't have access to a bookstore here in Greeley. It costs me 45 miles round trip to go to the nearest bookstore. And when I get there, I discover that the bookstore doesn't stock the book I want to write. The book I want to read. So I've made the trip for nothing. Now, Amazon has disrupted that distribution chain a bit because I can go on Amazon and order any book I want. Pretty much, as long as it's in print, it'll be pretty much on Amazon. I won't necessarily be able to buy it in the format I prefer. I may only be able to buy it there in hardcover. I may only be able to buy it there in paper. It's not necessarily going to be available in the ebook form. But at least I know where I can go to buy it. I go to the bookstore. The big bookstore. The biggest bookstore. I go to Amazon. So how is this a disruption? Well, the answer is it has to do with the fact that the nature of a disruption starts at the low end of the market. By selling books for 99 cents, $1.99, $2.99, $3.99, by selling books under $5, independent publishers, people like me, took advantage of a collection of technologies, not the least of which were the ebook technologies, the ebook development technologies, the access to editors for hire, the access to cover art, access to layout, and produce their own books to fill the under $5 market that the traditional publishers, that mainstream publishers have abandoned and left abandoned for the last 2 years. That is pretty much the definition of a disruptive innovation. We are serving an underserved client using established tools in ways that were previously unthought of. The idea that we could build a book for less than the bigs. I mean, yeah, who would have thought it go 20 years back. 1995. Who would have thought it? It's like publishing is publishing. Even in 2007, when I started podcasting, the idea that I was podcasting audio that cost considerably less than the studios could, than Macmillan could with their voice talent pool. And in spite of the fact that their voice talent is actually not, even then, was not in their employ, these were freelance narrators who were going out and finding the business and doing it for the bigs. ACX changed that slightly by making a relatively large pool of narrators of across a variety of skill levels available to indie authors like me. And one of the things that I could do is that, you know, if I'm going to have to pull the books down, I could go to ACX and put my books up there. I could, if I'm going to have somebody else do the books, I could hire a narrator to do the books out of ACX. I'm sure I could get a lot of suggestions as to who might narrate. So there are options. There are plenty of options for me to pursue. What I need to see is what the agreement is from this company to see whether or not it's an agreement I can accept. Because even though I could contract this, I could subcontract out the audio production, the reality is that subcontracting is going to require a certain amount of maintenance on my part. And if I'm going to completely overturn my business model, then I need to look at, okay, how is this going to go? And actually examine each piece of it to see which pieces of it I want or need to maintain versus which pieces of it I want or need to let go. So, yeah, there are plenty of options available, and what I'm waiting for is to see the actual agreement, to see what kind of terms they're going to lay out, to see if there are, in fact, provisions for going out of print, to see if the agreement is enforced for 7 years, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have the rights to all the books for 7 years, particularly if the books, A, aren't being produced in a timely manner, and B, aren't selling once they're there. Because one of their big claims, and one that I look most sideways at, is their ability to promote. And I'm not sure they understand social media marketing. We'll see. But I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. And with any luck at all, and assuming I don't forget, I'll talk to you then.